But the sun is shining, the crowd are packed in, and racing is underway.
Hello and welcome to Motorpod. My name's Lohei Orenzo. It's internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 318 for Wednesday, 9th May 2012. Now that shit, I can't get his accent back. Now I'll bin that one. I'll do a proper one.
No. We're keeping that. Hello, are Martin. And Martin, your love affair with Jorge has to be exposed.
I know. Ah, bless him. Hello, everybody. Yeah, I'm across in North Wales, where it's very early, and Jules is in California, where it's very late.
Indeed. And we had a pretty insane weekend of racing. We're going to try to make some sense of it. Martin, you were at Alden Park covering BSB.
Yep.
Jim and I were at Infineon covering AMA, and at the same time we had MotoGP and World Superbikes. It was crazy.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, of the two World Superbike races we were meant to have, we had 0.5.
Right. Per race,
but we'll get on to that. We got a bunch of interviews to insert in the show this week. We've got a little bit with James Whittam, who I spent the weekend shadowing and sitting behind him and Jack Burnicle in the commentary box. We've got Tony Carter, who's the British Eurosport main presenter, a lot of people will know. Charlie Hiscott, who's a producer for British Eurosport, and there's a bunch of extras we'll be throwing in. And from AMA, Jim and Jules got James Rispoli, Josh Hayes, Jason DeSalvo, Matt Maladin, and Blake Young. Matt Maladin, of course, not riding this year, but he was there in a promotional capacity. And I think we're all looking forward to hearing if he's mellowed at all, Jules, because let's face it, Matt Maladin was a byword for angry competitor.
Yes. He's got some great things to say, but I don't want to spoil it. But he does have some very interesting things to say about the current crop of competitors.
We almost certainly had some donations this week, but Jim deals with all that. Jim's having a week off from the show itself this week. So,
I mean, he was quite involved this weekend.
Oh, yeah. But just from the call. So, so we will catch up with, so if you have donated this week, thank you very much indeed. It's greatly appreciated. And it enables us to get out to these places and do all this good stuff. But you will get your name check, but it'll probably be next week.
Correct.
I don't think we've got any mistakes to clear up.
There's one tiny one, which is that Jim mentioned that my my Twitter account name changed to Pop Monkey without the three, which is actually not correct. That I do have that Twitter account, but I'm saving it for now. So continue using Pop Monkey with the three, POPMONK3Y. That's going to be my main Twitter account for the time being. That's the only route I had.
There we go. Now, I didn't really get involved in this email, but we had an email from Doug Edmiston.
Who writes in a lot in both senses of the term, often,
yeah,
and lengthy, and always very, very thoughtful stuff. I don't know if we should really read through this, but basically what Douglas is writing about is the subject of the email was like, there's something seriously wrong with this championship. And it talks about, the fact that Moto2 bikes on the average, produce maybe 130 horsepower, costs about 150,000 euros for
tops.
A Marquez,
yeah,
spec bike, you know.
Yeah.
And whereas a MotoGP bike, you know, puts out 250 horses, up to 250 horses that we know of. And, you know, just to lease for a year on the low end would cost 2.5 million euros. And yet at Estoril, there were only argument was that there were only
four seconds apart.
Yeah, a lap. which is a very valid point. I think a lot of people point this out, that the gains you get for spending, you know, for once you get over a certain hump, you know, like the difference between a sport bike you'll buy in the store and a Moto2 bike is not as great as it was, you know, maybe 10 years ago, but still it's pretty big. But then it's just gets exponential in how much you have to spend to get less and less and less. And yet, you know, these factories are going to, so I'm actually putting words in Douglas. This is Douglas's point, was that there's something really crazy about that. And could anything be done to Moto2 is a fantastic series, you know, very enjoyable to watch.
Yeah.
They're lapping almost as fast. Do we really need to have this crazy, incredibly expensive prototype top end when we don't, as fans, really see that much difference in the terms of, you know, raw speed, right? I mean, there were Estoril this last week was a perfect example. Some of the stuff that we saw happening in Moto2 was mind blowing, and it had nothing to do with the speed. You know,
imagine Moto2, the fastest lap quoted by Doug was Paul Espargaros. Asparagus, as he's called him, Paul Espargaro, with a 140.9. You could almost imagine his brother Aleth on the CRT saying, "Well, look, I might as well use your bike."
Yeah.
In MotoGP, because it's just as quick as my CRT bike.
Right, right.
I mean, it's crazy.
Right, right. And you know, he did a couple of calculations, and he says, you know, it costs about 600,000 euros per second a lap. But I do have to point out that like I said, you know, I think that you look at any series where you start pushing. Rules that are set by the governing bodies, right? There's, you know, certain displacement, certain amount of fuel to squeeze every ounce of power, every ounce of, to go that 0.5 second faster is just insanely expensive. You look at Formula One budgets and they would put a Formula One budget to get to get a car, a Formula One car, you know, 1 second a lap faster from one season to another would actually cover running an entire MotoGP team for a year.
Yeah.
You know, it's that crazy.
It's like it gets to a point where, I mean, as someone was talking about the CRTs, I think it was when Colin was on the show talking to Jim, and he said the first 4 seconds are dead easy to improve.
Exactly.
The last second is the one that you just cannot pull something out of the hat. That's where it's just lots and lots and lots of little bits. Remember Tommy Aquino recently on the show talking about the Moto2 bike he's riding in the CEV in Spain, and it's saying compared to the Supersport bikes, he said, you know, it's like every nut and bolt's titanium. Everything is trimmed, so there's not a single piece of excess plastic or carbon fiber that's not needed. And it's that cumulative thing. And all of that takes time and takes money and you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see Doug's point completely. As performance increases by a square, the money required to increase it that square increases by the cube.
Right.
So that's a helicopter thing to overcome drag, the power required. Drag increases a square and the power required to overcome it increases by the cube. So you get to a point where you have a vertical line on a graph and it will not go any quicker. So I guess it's very similar to that. But the
main thing is that the factors will continue to do it.
Yeah, they want to win. They want to be on top of the podium with all the exposure that brings, and they can sell their bikes.
Right. And the thing is, this also applies to riders, right? Like riders will tell you the same thing, that you know, at the top level, these guys, you put them up against your, you know, local series guys, and they will crush them.
Yeah.
But that split second that they don't have that Stoner has is always going to get him, you know, by the end of the race, 28 laps, that you know, 0.2 seconds is now several seconds.
Yeah.
You know?
I remember Colin years ago, I think it was when he was still in Fiat Yamaha, talking about trail braking the front or turning in with the front brake still applied. He said, because that compresses your forks, which shortens the bike, which speeds up the turning. And he said, anyone who does it on the road's an idiot, but on a track, you know, and with that, with us, with the, you know, MotoGP level riders, we can do it. He said, well, that will trim a 20th to a 10th of a second off your time through that corner, which seems minimal. But if there's 10 corners, that's a second a lap. He said, right. A second a lap will win you a championship,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And it is, it's these tiny margins. But, yeah, no, good email, Doug. Thanks very much. Keep them coming because they do give us things to talk about.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the other thing I wanted to just, I just wanted to give a shout out to Rogerio Sabino, who was at Estoril and just jotted a very nice note on our Facebook page about attending the Estoril round with his soon-to-be wife. He, I guess, was never at a race before and enjoyed herself. And I love hearing feedback from fans. I think, you know, we all do, from fans who are on the ground, you know, and can give us a little bit of the local color. Obviously, he's Portuguese and wanted something a little special that weekend that unfortunately didn't come to pass because we'll talk about it later. But so thank you very much, Rogerio, for writing. You guys can obviously email us motopod@motopodcast.com or use our Facebook or tweet to us, and you know we love hearing this kind of stuff. So keep them coming.
Sure. So news, Colin Edwards underwent successful surgery on his collarbone and an announcement is imminent. Now, Jules and I are recording this on Wednesday, the 10th of May. Wednesday, the 9th of May.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As to who is likely to be given Colin's ride for Le Mans in 2 weeks, because obviously Colin won't be back for that.
So shouldn't we talk about what happened to Colin?
I suppose we should, really. was this weekend, wasn't it? This wasn't Jerez.
It's so everything's such a jumble right now that maybe this will help. Hang on.
Yeah, I got nothing. I've got a rapidly cooling mug of coffee.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Yes. So for anyone who doesn't know, Colin had a bit of an accident, but he's okay.
Right.
So yeah, having said that, we'll just plow on and finish that.
I mean, the top two CRT guys came together. I mean,
yeah.
So the two guys we've been watching, Colin Edwards and
this was
and
during
Bunier.
practice or qualifying practice, I think, wasn't it?
Yes.
And Colin was on a slow lap. He was well off the racing line. Randy De Punier was coming through on a fast lap and lost the front. And the bike slid across and just wiped Colin's bike from underneath him. Now, he had looked back, seen Randy there, realized, yep, I'm fine, I'm well out of his way, looked forward again, so had no warning. He got slammed onto the deck and broke his left collarbone. Randy was, he had contusions, so he was battered and bruised, but was able to race. Colin obviously wasn't. But Colin's been tweeting any suggestions for who should get my ride. And some of the answers on Twitter have been quite funny.
Yes.
At Texas Tornado 5, it's well worth a follow. He's getting quite into the Twitter world.
Well, given that, you know, Valentino Rossi is due to retire this year, I think Valentino should ride his bike.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was a little bit of this was reported in the Daily Telegraph, which is one of the broadsheets. This is like one of the New York Times level newspapers in the UK. Mm-hmm. I say that the New York Times used to have a good reputation. I don't know if it still does, but you know it is a serious broadsheet newspaper, and they were reporting that both Gerry Burgess and Valentino Rossi are to retire at the end of the season, and. Immediately the journalists who know were reporting that's a case of listening to the Italian press and believing them. So, and Valentino's laughed off suggestions. Jerry Burgess, we don't know. Maybe Jerry's going to call it a day. I've not heard that officially. I've not heard him say that in interviews, but I think that's more likely. Rossi might well leave MotoGP, but I can't see him stopping competing.
Oh, no.
Somehow.
Oh, no, definitely not. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, David Emmett on Moto Matters wrote a really good article about where is Rossi going to go if he was going to just give up on Ducati. And basically the conclusion he arrived at was that there was nowhere to go and he'd have to either make Ducati work or just give up. And I just don't see Rossi giving up. So I think he's going to try it. Maybe too long. He does have an incredible nose. He's always had an incredible nose for timing, right?
He had, exactly.
And now I'm worried that Valentino Rossi is not somebody we want to see fade slowly, you know, into kind of a
obscurity.
Oh, yeah. Remember that guy? Yeah. Isn't that the guy that used to like win every freaking championship? You know. What's he still doing out there?
But when the rumors came around about a Yamaha, you notice Lorenzo got straight in with some probably very safe, because he knows it won't happen, but effective PR saying, I'd be fantastic to have Valentino back in the team. Yeah, I'd welcome him back. And it's just like, oh, just twist the knife.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
But you can't blame him having Valentino having kicked off about, you know, it's me or him. And whoops.
Yep.
And the other thing in the politics of MotoGP is we do have news regarding Paul Bird's PBM Racing CRT team, but you'll have to wait for that till later because I'll leave it to Tony Carter to tell you that news in case you haven't heard it.
Sweet.
So, moving on. Now, I haven't seen much of any of the MotoGP races. I haven't seen anything in Moto3 at all.
Oh,
so do you want to take us through this
Martin,
one?
You have to see Moto 3.
I have heard it's
Moto
rather good.
Moto 3 was rather good. Yes, Moto 3 was an amazing. Moto 3, Moto 2, it's what we watch motorcycle racing for, you know. Battles to the very, very, very end. I don't know. So here's my suggestion. Let's not go lap by lap. Talk about its various incidents because we got way too much to cover. We got many interviews to run, because the Moto 3 race was the big letdown was that Miguel Oliveira had a mechanical breakdown,
right?
And he was running at the top. He was looking good for a podium or even more. So it was very disappointing. That was earlier on. Fantastic racing between Sandro Contesi Vinales, which I'll mention in a second, and Romano Fenati had a very bad day. The Cinderella story kind of had a setback because he had two crashes. He had one. Well, one was a collision with another rider. I believe it was Danny Kent that he collided with. They went off track, and then they came back, but they didn't actually crash. And then later, Fnatic actually crashed. So that was a bummer. You could see that even just from the body language and walking off that he's starting to already, even in his third GP, he's already starting to realize, right? I'm here. I'm actually fighting with these guys that, like, you know, have been tipped for the championship or whatever, and this was a big setback, huge setback for him.
I saw some shots of him wheeling his bike away wheeling his bike towards the air fence, and he looked pretty dejected.
Yes, yeah, definitely. And apparently he walked into the pits and just tossed his helmet at the wall and just walked out.
Ah, right. Yeah. Well, that's not a bad way to go, apparently, because let's face it, Lorenzo used to kick his helmet around the gouge and have right tantrums. And I think everyone remembers Marquez's dying swan impression at Aragon 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's right.
So that was, I shouldn't laugh, but that was funny.
And let's not forget one of my favorite angry moments, which was when John Hopkins beat the crap out of a Suzuki.
Oh, yes.
Remember, I think when it was the 13th engine failed, this was like years and years ago.
Yeah. But
that was something, too.
Quite well known, that one.
And we're kind of going in the wrong order, but we already started with Moto3. Because Portugal is an hour ahead of the rest of the Europe.
Except
for you guys. And yeah. As a result...
We're an hour behind the rest of Europe.
Correct. Right, so that's what I meant.
Yeah.
So the schedule is a little strange because it was actually Moto2 ran first, then MotoGP, and Moto3 was last. But since we already started talking about it, Carradin and Luis Salom had a fantastic battle for third. Unfortunately, this was one of those cases where you could see, you know that there are certain characters that thrive under pressure and certain characters that fold under pressure. And unfortunately, I think Carradin folded under pressure, because he made a stupid mistake. And he was looking so good. He was looking really good to take that third, his first podium. I think it would be the first podium for a Malaysian rider in the GP's period. And but unfortunately, he went very, very wide, made a mistake, and Luis Salom took advantage. But the real story was out front because Sandro Cortesi and Maverick Vinales had a very tense kind of battle for the last maybe 6 or 7 laps of the race. And then it just went bonkers on the last lap, just unbelievable. They did pass each other a couple of times on the straight prior to that last lap. But on the last lap, it's worth just watching the last lap.
Yeah.
And what was really, I think threw an extra spanner in there was that they ran into a bunch of backmarkers just as they were approaching the chicane at the end and right before the parabolica. So they got into traffic just, they were tire to tire and they got into traffic just as at the most important point. It didn't really affect things too much. Although I have to say that Cortesi did do something that looked a little bit dangerous as they powered out of the final corner because they had to go around some backmarkers, and I think he got the worst of it, and so he hadn't been leading that into that last corner.
Yeah.
He did do this kind of, run across the entire track to make sure, well, if Vinales is somewhere there, I'm going to make sure that he either hits the brakes or I collect
them. Or he doesn't
get
a toe anyway.
Or neither one of us gets in there or something. Yeah, doesn't get a toe. It looked kind of dangerous, but they were safe. I could see that Vinales was upset about the move, but nothing much was said about it afterwards. So yeah, Cortesi won the race, and Maverick Vinales is now leading the championship.
Cortesi's leading the championship.
Oh my God, you're right. Cortesi's
by 2 points.
Yes.
But it's very close. You've got 57 is Cortesi, 55 Vinales, Luis Salom on 49, Romano Fanati on 45, so not unrecoverable. Then quite a gap back to Zulfami Khairuddin on 29, Alex Rins on 28, and so on and so forth.
Right.
So, it's looking like Cortesi's this year's Tyrol. And, That's who Vinales is going to have to beat if he's going to take that maiden title.
Well, it looks like the KTM have come up with a really, really good engine. It's a very strong engine. The only time Vinales was able to pass Cortesi on the straight was when it looked like Cortesi was just going to let him go by.
Yeah.
So Vinales had to make it all up in the corners.
But, the Honda's not that far behind, but like you say, certainly the KTMs look like a strong package.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the top 10 now, because remember, after Qatar, we were thinking, wow, I remember during practices, Vinales was the only Honda getting into the top 10. I think an Oliveira might have been as well, but you look at, you've got Cortese on a KTM, Viñales on an FTR Honda, Salom on a Kalex KTM, Fanati FTR Honda, Kai Rudin KTM, then there's Rins on a Suter Honda, Masbro on a Honda, right. Antonelli on an FTR. So it is mixing it up, mm-hmm. but it's just a shame there's only the two. It'd be nice to see the Mahindras get their act together and possibly get a bit closer up. Then we had, not in chronological sequence, but in rising prestige sequence, was the Moto2, which was equally entertaining, I believe.
Oh, my. Yes. It was. your other boyfriend, Mark Marquez, was amazing in this race. But the guy that is really coming on strong is Paul Espargaro, who has always been a very aggressive, entertaining rider, but I never really expected him to be as consistent as he's been this right now. You remember him in 125s against Marquez and
Iannone.
And
Iannone. Remember, yeah, him and Iannone having a headbutting contest.
Exactly, exactly.
Was it Misano? I can't remember where it was, and they had a massive bust up. Yep. Yeah, a fiery character. But I love the Espargaro brothers. They're always smiling. They mm-hmm. look like they really enjoy their racing, and it was good to see him get his first win last time out at Jerez, albeit in slightly strange circumstances with the red flagged race. But he's up and running.
Yeah. And they had a ding dong race for sure. Luthi was up there. Obviously, Luthi led for most of the race and had a. But it, I think that it was one of those donkey work where, you know, Nick Harris loves to say he did all the donkey work, and it really was true. He kept the group going fast enough where they didn't have to worry about the guys behind. They did start to open up a gap, but both Marquez and Espargaro were able to pass Luthi when they needed to, and they did.
Sure.
So then it became he did stick with them, and if you look at the final standings, Marquez won the race. Espargaro was down 2 seconds. And Luthi was just behind Espargaro. It looked like maybe Luthi and Espargaro were the ones fighting it out, but that was not the case because Espargaro made an incredible effort on that last lap to try to beat Marquez, and just, you know, one of them had, this was one of those, you know, something had to give, and unfortunately for Espargaro, it was for him. You know, he ran wide, and actually he just ran way too deep on the brakes. It looked like, I think the rear wheel was totally up in the air, yeah. And could not recover. He did actually manage not to crash, which was amazing. But Marquez was able to take off and win.
And that parabolic, I mean, that is not a corner you can do a sort of.
I was just going to say it's
a lunge last corner. You've got to just hold it on there, haven't you? And we've seen people go around the outside there before. We've seen them hold it tight, but it seems to be because the finish line is a reasonable distance away from the exit of the corner that the technique there is to stay tucked in and try and beat them on the toe. But God, it is last gasp stuff.
And did I mention the Moto 3 last lap? Because they were, those two guys were doing stuff that it was Rossi Lorenzo Catalunya level kind of stuff.
I look forward to watching it.
You have to see it, man.
And just off the podium, 9 seconds behind Marquez, Johann Zarco, he seems to be really taken to the Moto2. He's adapting with some real verve and doing well. Ian only fifth, which is good to see him further up the sharp end. Alex De Angelis, Tony Elias, Julian Simon, the usual suspects. Mika Kallio, Bradley Smith in 10th, Scott Redding in 11th, disappointing weekend for Scott.
And again, Scott looked fantastic at the beginning and faded. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know what can be done to fix that. It's his riding style. You can tell he loves to slide the bike. He starts to slide the bike early on, and that's got to be costing the tires. You know, I mean, his riding style is just hurting him, I think.
And he's a big lad.
He's a big lad.
And having just mentioned Johann Zarco, interesting to see that his sparring partner from last year in 125s, Nico Tirol, is not having such a great time back in 16th place.
Mm-mm.
So on the championship, Marquez leads on 70 points. Paul Espargaro second on 61. Tom Luthi down on 43 points. Iannone up to fourth on 33. And Scott Redding 28. And the aforementioned Zarco on 23. Mika Kallio 22. And back it goes. So reasonably tight at the top between those two, but Tom Luthi needs to pull his finger out because that is a 27 point gap between himself and Marquez. He's already a full race win, over a full race win away.
Right.
And then we came to MotoGP. Now, this I did see a fair amount of. they can't always all be ding-dong battles.
No, unfortunately.
This wasn't.
I heard people saying that this was, you know, one of the lousiest races of ever, and I don't know. I've seen some pretty lousy racing in MotoGP, processional stuff. It was tense. Yeah, okay, the things didn't change in the positions that we saw at the end for much of the race, but there was at least a chance of it. You know, we saw Jorge Lorenzo pull back very nicely on Casey Stoner during the entire race. In fact, you know, let me ask you this, because I mentioned it on Twitter and I don't think I got my point across, because 140 characters is not really a conversation. But did you think that if Danny Pedrosa didn't have that moment in the beginning of the race, that maybe this would have been a completely different race?
Possibly.
Not because of Danny being able to fight, but because of Lorenzo getting stuck behind Danny while it happened and getting slowed down. That gave Stoner a big gap, which then took many, many laps for Lorenzo to close. And then, you know, he was never able to finally capitalize on it.
And we're back to the early discussion about microseconds making the difference over the course of a race. And the thing that got me was the word. So two-thirds race distance, you'd suddenly see Hoy looked like he was right on the rear wheel and the timings were coming down to half a second, and you realize then that it's the camera angles foreshortening the gap and he's not that close, but he was definitely closing in. And then whether it's he's just like, I can't maintain this without crashing, or Casey was going, oh, he's getting a bit close and just finding something extra. Yeah, it's quite possible that it could have been different if that early incident hadn't happened. I mean, I was in the
remember Assen last year with Ben Spies and the incident with Simoncelli right at the start of the race. I mean, Spies had he won that fair and square, but he was very clear afterwards. That race would have been completely different had he not had that gap right in the very beginning, which led him. You know, that's when their heartbeats are at their highest. That's when
together. This is something that James Whitten made a point on a BSB race, one of the BSB races, and it was about Shaky Byrne. He said, if you can get your fast laps in at the beginning and establish a gap, it throws everyone else's strategy. It makes it very different. And from there, even though you may not be able to maintain that pace for the whole race, once there's a gap, you can
control things.
You can control things if you are the type of rider that has the capacity to do that, and Casey Stoner undoubtedly is and does. But I mean, we were stood in the box. QP was going on the Sunday for BSB because obviously we were one day out, being a bank holiday. The main races were on Monday, and someone came in and MotoGP was on, and they went, oh, 14 laps to go. Does anyone bothered about knowing the result? And everyone was like, no, we can't hide from it. I mean, these guys are the British Eurosport team, so it's information's flooding at all time. And he went, because this was the Eurosport non-live feed, so the race had already finished. And he went, yep, the point score as you see now, that's not going to change. And it was just like, oh. So everybody knew, yeah, he might be closing Stoner down, but he ain't going to get past him. And it was strange.
I see, because you guys knew the results, but we're just watching. Yeah, I see.
Someone just came in and I knew the result. I've been watching a bit on the app, and someone just came in and said 14 laps to go. Yeah, that doesn't change now. And at that stage, Cal was right up with Dovi, but in the end, he got dropped by a couple of seconds.
Yes.
So, Carol Abraham, James Ellison, Yoni Hernandez, Mattia Pessini, and Ivan Silva were the non-finishers.
Mm-hmm.
So what that does to the championship, we've got Stoner leading on 66 points, Lorenzo 1 point behind on 65, Danny on 52, Crutchlow 37, Dovi 35, Bautista 29, Bradle 24, Nicky Hayden 23, Rossi 22, Barbera 19, and Ben Spies 18.
Ouch. Ben Spies
again.
Very strange.
One of our listeners, and I do apologize, I can't remember who it was, who'd asked if this was a Twitter question we had last week. Is Ben Spies dipping form temporary, or do we need to be worried? He's now saying, okay, that's three races now. Now do we need to be worried? You know, it's tricky.
Yeah, that's a hard one to explain, because the Yamahas are so, so strong.
Yeah. And he looked so strong pre-season.
Right.
You know, we were looking at the timing sheets, and there were a couple of their sessions when they were at Brno, and I'm trying to think where else they tested Mugello. And he was right up there with Stoner and with Pedrosa and with Lorenzo, and you're thinking, wow, these four guys are going to be duking it out. And don't know. I mean, no one suggested it yet, but he did open a Texan burger bar this winter. You know, maybe he's been promoting his, I don't know. No, I'm joking. I mean, I don't think there's many people who put as much effort into maintaining fitness as Ben Spies does, but.
I don't think it's a physical fitness issue at all. Definitely not.
Something's going on.
If it wasn't for Valencia, I would say that something happened to him at PI. And he had such a horrible, remember that last year in PI, he just had so many falls.
Yeah.
And but then he bounced back so nicely in Valencia. I don't think it's a mental thing.
But then he did have a couple at Qatar, didn't he? I mean, he had that weird one where it looked like he was surfing.
Like his hand was caught in some equipment. Yeah.
Maybe that spooked him. I don't know. But also other riders suffering a bit. James Ellison again didn't finish. He didn't crash, I don't think. I think he pulled in something not quite right with the bike. And we heard some news about.
Well, Yoni Hernandez, I believe, also was it this race where he had the mechanical at the beginning? Yeah, he had to start from pit lane.
No, that was Herrera. He stalled it on the grid, went into pit lane, he came straight back into the pits at the end, unfortunately. But again, Yoni didn't manage to finish this race. We got a bit of a scoop. Now, this was recorded. This is Tony Carter, the main British Eurosport presenter, and I had a chat with him. This is on Monday. But we did find out some interesting, I'm sure everyone will know about it by now, who's been paying attention. But Eurosport's got quite a scoop. And then this then moves on into a conversation about, interestingly, just concerning what we've just been talking about, how different riders need different motivations.
Mm.
So take it away, Tony. It's Martin again from MotoPod at the end of two cracking World Superbike races. I'm here with Tony Carter.
Superbike, Martin? Come on.
Did I just say World? Well, it's Martin with MotoPod again at the end of Monday afternoon. Two cracking British Superbike races, won by Chris Walker and Shaky Byrne, respectively. Now, after Chris's win, I'm here with Tony Carter, the British Eurosport main presenter. You have got to speak to Paul Bird, the team manager of Rapid Solicitors Kawasaki and Shaky Byrne. And, of course, Paul also runs the PBM CRT FM MotoGP.
Yep.
And you got a bit of a scoop.
Yeah, it was quite good, really. There's been a few rumours floating around this weekend about James Ellison in the CRT, Paul Bird Motorsport team. And the rumours were that Ellison might be replaced by a different rider. So as we were having the conversation, and it's a nice time to try and do this sort of thing, you know, when you're live. Not because of the team manager, Birdie can really shoulder pressure well in that sort of environment, but because you're live, it kind of gives you the impetus to ask the question. Worst they can do is say, look, I don't want to talk about it, or not answer you. But okay, occasionally they'll say, you know what, the world might as well know about this, and boom, and say what's going on. So just ask them, look, there's rumours going around about Ellison on the CRT bike, and there's rumours that you might switch riders. What's the truth in that? And Birdie, much to my surprise, came out and said, yeah, at Le Mans, the next round, we're thinking of putting Shane Byrne on the bike. We might rest James for a round and see what Shaky says about the bike. So it sounds like we're going to get Shane Byrne on the Paul Bird Motorsport CRT bike at Le Mans. It might not sound like much in the global scheme of things, but if Paul Bird is thinking from a management point of view, we're sort of sitting still with what James is bringing to the party, by bringing Shaky in, it'll either shake things up, no pun intended, or it might bring an extra element onto the bike that helps James get past this chatter problem that we know he's suffering from.
Sure.
He's talking about it. So it's interesting. But yeah, as a journalist in this sort of environment, I mean, you've seen it, Martin, today.
Yeah.
You know what goes on behind the scenes, and you've heard it as well, what's always going on behind our scenes. And it's always a bit tough. You're always flat out. We've still got two more races to do this today, part of our live coverage. And occasionally, little things like that, they're just the icing on the cake for us.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden, we're like, ooh, that's a great story. We've just told everybody. We've broken it. You know, and great. And then the reaction will stop back of that. And when we go to the next round of GP with at Le Mans, then that'll be a story that we've started here. You know, we've told everybody, and it'll carry on from there. So for me, that's a bit of icing on the cake.
Shaky will be on a high, having just had his first victory of the season here.
Yeah.
And, of course, he's been in the MotoGP paddock before.
Yes, that's true.
And as a development rider, very few people as much experience.
Absolutely. Well, Shaky had his time on the cube, don't forget. And there were times on the cube, I think it was a stop-start process through there, very much for Shaky. And he would often find himself sort of 17th, 18th, 19th on the grid. That was at a time when there was more than 17 or 18, 19 riders on the grid, of course. But Shaky's good as a development rider. That's the side of him that people tend not to remember too much about Shaky. They just sort of look at the race wins and don't realise how much he can bring a bike on. So perhaps Shaky will be the perfect person to bring onto that project. It's not easy. You have to respect Paul Bird as the manager taking the manager's decision. That's never an easy task for any manager, especially when they try and build a relationship with riders, you know, and the managers try and be close to the rider, because you won't always get the full story out of a rider, you know, in terms of what's going on in their head, the mood they're in when they turn up at a race weekend. You know, I worked for many years with Rob McElney. I worked for him in his team. I looked after the PR side for the Virgin for several years with Rob Mack for the Virgin teams. And in there we had Steve Hislop riding for us. And we all knew Hizzy really well, knew him very closely for years and years and years. And Hizzy was a prime example of that. He could turn up at a race weekend and we could tell you on a Thursday whereabouts we were going to be on the race day. Just by the way Hizzy was feeling about the world. It wasn't necessarily about the bike or the tyres. And once Rob understood that, Rob would work a lot on his mental state. I don't mean that in a negative way, I just mean, you know, bring him up or calm him down, depending on where he was, on the Thursday and the Friday, and that would be where the work would happen, and then the results would come on the Saturday and the Sunday.
So it's all about communication and not necessarily just vocal communication.
Exactly, having that sort of, you guys can't see this on the podcast, I don't know why I'm doing it, but I'm sort of rubbing my fingers and thumbs together. It's that sort of touch, that feel, that vibe that's going on, you know, in the team, and that's what the best team managers do. And occasionally on the show, I think I asked a couple of guys it today, you know, with the younger riders, like Luke Hedger, in the Motorstar Championship, you know, do they need a cuddle, do they need a kick up the arse? And that's true, you know, a lot of team managers will talk in those extremes, you know, he needs a cuddle at this point, so they put the family around them, you know, the team is the family around them, they reassure the rider. Other times a rider will come in and from the team's point of view, there's nothing wrong with that bike, and the rider's sort of picking out excuses. That's when they need a size 10 of their jacket to get them moving, and that's where the best managers know when to apply one or the other.
I have heard that story about riders before, where they'll come in, say that there's something wrong, and then they'll go away, they come out, the mechanics will say, we've made a few adjustments, see how that is, they come back and say it's brilliant,
and
they've done nothing.
Absolutely right. I don't want the name drop, but it's a great name to drop, so I will do. About 2 or 3 months ago, maybe a bit longer, I had dinner with Wayne Rainey. Now, he's my all-time hero, is Wayne Rainey. So I was a bit sort of, you know, starstruck for the first hour. And then we got into talking. Incidentally, Wayne Rainey loves mixed martial arts. Watching mixed martial arts. Can you believe that, Wayne Rainey? Quite a violent old boy on the side, yeah. Really. Anyway, I digress. But I was talking to Wayne Rainey, and we were talking about rider attitudes and what you do as a team boss, you know, and when you pick out how a rider works. And Rainey was saying then that even when he was racing, you know, he would turn up and he would make sure his mind was absolutely set 100% on what was going to happen on that race weekend, and nothing would deter from it. To the point where, you know, when he packed up the motorhome or the caravan or the van or whatever to go racing, at that point, it doesn't matter what else happened around him, he was focused on that race weekend. That's where you see it in this sort of environment.
I mean, we see it with James doing the grid walk. Some of the riders are more than happy to talk and chat, and they're bubbly, and others, you can almost sense that they're like, leave me alone, I'm in my mission bubble. I've got my race face on.
Very true.
I mean, I had an experience of that yesterday. Went to talk to Chris Walker, who was on our show a couple of weeks ago. I had a great chat with Jim on there over the phone, and he told me in no uncertain terms he was about to go and race. Come back later. Chris, which I promptly did.
Chris usually likes to chat. He usually likes a good natter.
Yeah.
But occasionally, like, I think when he feels there's a result on, especially at this stage of his career, he'll bring the shutters up. Some guys will chat for England. Alistair Seeley, great talker. If you go and stick a mic under him.
I spoke to Alistair yesterday. He was fantastic.
Ben Wilson, he's another one. He will chat the arse off you.
Yeah.
If you let him do it. But when you're asking him questions, Ben, you have to get ready. You have to sort of chuck across it to stop him going on. But yeah, there's many chatters out here, but there are some riders who will put the barriers up, you know. You have to excuse me, I've got to go back to the Superstock 1000 race, but I just want to say hello to everybody out there. I do listen to it. Jim's very good, and you're very good too. So
thank you very
thumbs
much
up for all of you. I'm going to head off now.
Thank you
all
very
right.
much indeed, Tony. So great stuff there. Thanks very much indeed, Tony. And along with the rest of the British Eurosport team, they were magnificent hosts this weekend. And
that's me, World Super Sport.
Thank you very much. Touche. Well, there was another World Series going on this weekend, and some of it didn't really happen. World Superbikes Monza.
You know this... what? I mean, as everyone who listens to the show knows, I hate Monza, so I didn't shed a tear.
No. And interestingly, it is a very special, in inverted commas, and you can take that as a positive or a negative track, as became clear. Race one started dry. We had Sylvain Guintoli on pole position, who snatched it at the last minute from Tom Sykes during another wet super pole on Saturday, which meant there was only two sessions, but very well done again from Sylvain and the Liberty Effenberg team. Race one started dry, but rain started to fall and the red flags were out within two or three laps. They then cancelled the race. During those two or three laps, John Hopkinson crashed. He's broken his right foot. He's unlikely to make the race this weekend at Donington Park. Oh my goodness, how much bad luck can one person have?
He must be taking it from other riders at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. Mark Aitchison went down as well. We then had, they were delayed and they looked like they were going to go out on wets. Then all the riders were having discussions and some riders got into the safety cars and went off for a track inspection. As they did that, because the track by this stage was starting to dry, as they did that, the heavens opened. It got absolutely soaked again and they just said, right, we're cancelling the race for safety concerns. Good news for Max Biaggi, who'd had an engine blow up during race one. He had to be towed back to the pits by Carlos Checa. And there's no way he'd have been ready for a restart for race one.
And how cool is that of Checa to do the foot peg toe?
Yeah. James Whitton was giving
good
us
man,
a
yeah,
talk through. He said, and as James said, it used to happen a lot more than it does now. he said, but you get quite good at doing that. And speaking of Mr. Whitton, he can now explain why they don't run Monza, or they don't like to run Monza in the wet. This is just a quick moment's explanation. Take it away, James. All right, it's Martin from MotoPod here, and I'm in the Eurosport box with James Whitton. BSB Supercar Bowl has just started.
Yep.
And we watched the carnage at Monza. Now, the Superbike race was red flagged initially for rain,
yep,
and then they called it off, and you were saying that Monza's not kind to wet tyres.
No, Pirelli haven't got a wet tyre that'll stand the constant high speed, the the amount of time you're going over 200 miles an hour for these kilometre long straights at Monza, it doesn't happen anywhere else, and the tyres, the wet tyres just weren't lasting three or four laps, so they couldn't actually run if it was wet, which it is.
Sure. So they cancelled race one. We were watching World Super Sport.
Yep.
And that looked like
another crash fest. Yeah. Lots of people going down. As I last watched it 2 minutes ago, Sam Lowes was leading from his teammate Jules Clazel. But anything could happen. It was wet, it was slippery, there were people touching white lines. We saw Sheridan Marais big crash out of Ascari and bounce off the barriers. He looked to get up all right, although stiff. So yeah, it's all going on at Monza.
Yeah, we've had a little sprinkling of rain here at Alton, but I'm guessing that's probably psychological rain, as I believe you've called it before.
Yeah, mental rain, but shush, mate. It looks like it's stopped now.
Yeah. Okay, and we'll be back with James later on. Thanks very much.
Spot on.
So there you have it. Monza destroys wet tyres. And there's a lot of pictures out there on the net. David Emmett's been posting a couple. Ian Wheeler put one up. In fact, James Whittam was tweeting pictures of severe delamination on some of those tyres. That didn't happen. Then we had the World Super Sport race. Now, this did happen, and this was a wet race. But then it's sort of understandable that they don't have the power of the World Superbike, so the wet tyres can withstand the pressure a lot better. And this was really a tale of two riders. This was Sam Lowes and Jules Clouzel, teammates, who had a right proper ding-dong, and all of us from Assen thinking Sam had been out front in the wet there, pulling away, crashed. And this time he held it together brilliantly. But he did run wide at one point. Jules Clouzel got through and they stuck together again, but Sam just couldn't quite get past. He did have a last corner lunge, but ran wide in the parabolica, and Jules Clouzel got past him and beat him by 0.3 of a second, with Keenan Sofuoglu rounding out the podium 17 seconds back. There was a brilliant tweet from one journalist at Estoril to another at Monza. I think it might have been David Emmett's to Jared Earle, saying, "Your parabolica is wetter than our parabolica," which just made me laugh. We won't go through these results exhaustively, but Keenan Sofuoglu is leading the World Supersport Championship on 61. Sam Lowes on 51. Fabien Foray on 49. And Brock Parks, early season
favorite.
What happened
to Foray? I didn't see these races at all. I just read about them, but I didn't see what. Was it just a bad race for him, or did he have a moment or something?
He finished 12th. I think he'd run off and come back on and did a couple of Monza ride-throughs on the – you know, we have the chicanes and then you have the drive through.
Of course.
He'd gone through there at least once, I think. Brock Parks had a potentially nasty-looking crash because it looked – from the camera angle, the camera's behind the air fence. His bike slid into the air fence. He slid in behind it. And at first we thought he'd slid into his own bike, but it turned out he didn't. I don't think he's hurt. But obviously that was his race over. Now, this is the background interesting bit that I found absolutely fascinating. The people last week, there were people tweeting and criticizing Eurosport for their scheduling. You're thinking, Alan said, you've got MotoGP in Portugal. You've got World Superbikes in Monza. You've got British Superbikes, and this is British Eurosport we're referring to here, at Alton Park. And they're trying to schedule all of this, and they have this really tight schedule running. And then suddenly, Monza goes, red flag. Now, that's now a race on a delay. So they're thinking, wow, we're going to have to cut stuff out. So the producers in the background have got bits of paper and on the radios to each other, and they're chopping this and chopping that. Then they say, no, we're cancelling that race. Now suddenly you don't have to cut stuff out. You've got time to fill. So you have to put something in. And this was going on. And again, we're back with Tony Carter, who's just going to have a quick word. And you can hear the sort of despairing laughter here as things are going on. You can hear James and Jack in the background bantering with various other members of the team, including Charlie Hiscott, the producer. And this is Tony on what happens on days like this.
Hi everyone, it's Martin from MotorPod again, still in the Eurosport box, and we've just watched the delayed start to race 2 at Monza. This is carnage. With me is Tony Carter, you'll know, from British Eurosport Motorcycle Presenting. We've got James and Jack, and James Hayden also in the box. And It's changing from minute to minute. I mean, how on earth do you cope when this sort of thing happens? You've got three series from three different countries with three different weather conditions.
Yeah, it's not easy. I'm sure everybody at home, Martin, appreciates how difficult it can be. All they've got to do is watch our output for some of the time to realise how difficult it is. But it's so complicated. You know, we've got live footage coming in from Monza. We've got teams in London. We've got teams here at Alton. They've all got to talk to each other. We've got to work out all the timings that are going on. The program's constantly changing underneath us. And it can actually change whilst you're talking about something on air, live. Yeah. So as you're talking about one subject on air, you're getting a certain count, you know, you've got 30 seconds left, and that can change. You can be going somewhere else completely different as you're saying the thing that you're meant to be saying about where you're going next. So it's all very tricky. But, I mean, right now, it's horrendous. I feel so sorry for the lads out in Monza. As we're watching them now, they're just heading out on their warm-up lap. That's the second warm-up lap, because the race has just been delayed for about 5-10 minutes. And every time the race gets delayed, we're put on standby by the producer here. So we've all got to be ready. James, Jack and James have all got to be ready, as have the cameramen and the sailmen, ready to go. So if we get the call, we have to be out there. And then Phil, keep going, talk about whatever the main story arc is. And it's not, you know, it's a tough thing. But trust me, none of us are complaining about it. Oh, no, Sylvain Guintoli. There you go, talk about things changing underneath you. Sylvain Guintoli looks like he's packed up on the warm-up lap. That's a nightmare. If they're trying to punt, they're trying to actually push it now as Sylvain's trying to get going. He's jumping up and down. That isn't going to start. No, it's such high compression on the Ducati. What a nightmare. What a nightmare. So the pole position, man, absolutely knackered. That's awful.
That's
criminal. Sorry, man, I know you're asking a question. I'm sort of...
Absolutely. I mean, it's happening live as we're talking. We've got Michelle Fabrizio...
Looks like he's packing up as well. Yeah. He's doing something. He's trying to reset something, it looks like, on this dash. But, the great thing about what we do and what we get to do, and we know we're very lucky to do it, and, you know, we feel very... very empowered as well, in a certain way. But what we get to do is be here and, you know, meet all the races and talk about the stories and be actually in the story as it's unfolding around you, and that's a very exciting thing. You know, for instance, you take what's happened to Josh Brooks over the past few years. You know, I'm a massive Josh Brooks fan. I think he's a really good guy. You know, you get to talk to him, he's a lovely fella. And with all the things that happened around Josh over the years, it was very important that we, as you know, James and Jack and I, we kept the straight line. We told the facts as they were as they appeared, and we tried to keep on that side of the story. And that sort of thing happens. We've got other riders packing up here. This is very strange indeed. Oh, that's Fabrizio again trying to... It looks like he's trying to reset something on his dash.
Yeah.
So I don't think there'll be a red flag. I think this race will get underway, so we'll probably be taking off standby at the moment. But yes.
But certainly anybody who's watching and gets frustrated at, oh, no, I can't believe it, and now because this race has been delayed, they're not going to be able to show that race. Having been here and seen the background, I mean, these guys are sat in here, and then you all get a word in your headphones, and then 10 seconds later, you're outside, nice and calm, talking to camera, doing a link piece, doing a phone call to the guys out in Monza or the guys across in Estoril. And it is fascinating, but goodness me, talk about juggling.
Well, it might be
keeping spinning plates.
Pretty much. I think that's a good way of summarising it, really. It is like spinning plates, but you're sort of spinning plates, and at any time people can take a plate off the pole, or they can take a pole away as you're trying to spin it, and that's the point. But they're about to get underway now at Monza for hopefully a full race. It certainly looks like it should be dry.
And with a few missing gaps on the grid, it looks like Sylvain's not made the start.
No Fabrizio.
Nor Fabrizio.
Come on, Tom.
Come on, Tom.
Good start for Tom.
And there you go.
So, after the World Supersport race, we had World Superbike Race 2, which was strange because on the warm-up lap, both Sylvain Guintoli, pole position man, and Michel Fabrizio broke down. It was really strange. Now, they had been held on the grid about to launch on the warm-up lap, when I think a few spots of rain had fallen and people were going, oh, hang on. And they went, no, it's all right. It's imaginary rain or mental rain, psychological rain. And so they launched them for the warm-up lap. Sylvain and Michel both broke down and didn't make the grid. Strange, but true.
Whoa.
Yeah, no, it's really strange. And Fabrizio, he was banging something on his dash. Someone was saying he was trying to fast forward his iPod to a tune he liked and wasn't in the right place. I'm not riding to ABBA. You know, I need Generation X on here or something. But yeah.
Do you remember last year when Zarco did some mechanical work on his bike and brought it back.
Yeah. Well, did we ever find out what he was doing?
I think the fuel flow stopped. He literally lifted the tank, moved some tubing around, got the bike running again, and put the tank back down.
Very impressive. And remember Stoner a couple of years ago when he had a camera come loose?
Oh my God! Yes, correct.
Banging around. That was crazy.
Yeah.
And Nicky at Indy with a loose flapping knee slider. Ouch. But anyway, we started race two, and it was going really well. Tom Sykes took off like a scalded cat. And we've seen this before, and it's sometimes it's like, as long as he's got a 20-second lead by mid-race, he might be able to hold on for a podium finish, because that Kawasaki does seem to chew tires, whether it's Tom's riding style or the Kawasaki or a mixture of the two. But he got out front, and he was holding it nicely. We had a brilliant battle between Leon Haslam, Eugene Laverty, and Marco Melandri, with Biaggi always with them, and Johnny Ray, for that matter. And then the rain started to come down, and the riders started waving their arms, and it was lap 8. They started flapping. At the beginning of lap 9, the red flags came out, and it was pretty much straight away. And they said, right, we're not messing about. We're going to call it a race there, but only half points were awarded because they hadn't achieved 2/3 race distance. A lot of people kicking off about it. I think, hang on, you know, maybe what the organisers need to do is drop Monza from the schedule, but it would be like dropping the Monaco Formula One Grand Prix. All the Formula One fans know no one's ever going to overtake there, but they won't drop it because it's historic, and anyway, most of the riders live there, and they like to be able to yell to their pit team, I can see my house from here, as they drive
and
by.
My tax accountant.
Yes, exactly. Tax, I don't think they do that there, do they?
That's the whole point.
Exactly. So I don't know what they do about it. I think they're damned if they do and they're damned if they don't. But the key focus has to be on safety. You know, yes, if it was completely safety, no one would race anywhere ever. But some of the teams have been kicking off about Pirelli's inability to produce a wet tire that can deal with Monza's 200-mile-per-hour straights. Pirelli have hit back saying, hang on, we gave you advice. The intermediate would last and the intermediate would deal with the water and you all ignored us. Liberty Effenbert have come out and said those races were cancelled because it was in the interests of a very small group of riders who have far too much influence and the organisers listen to them too much. And I'm thinking, ooh, who could you mean by that? Max? Carlos? Don't know. Liberty Effenbert are now considering their racing future. So there weren't many toys left in many prams. I've since heard Liberty Racing will be at Donington with their riders, but there is no mention of Effenbert, their main sponsor, the Czech Brewers, which is not good news if they're saying, hang on, we will compete. I mean, these guys have got four riders on the grid. Okay, Brett McCormick's having a bit of a recuperation rest, but they are putting four bikes on that grid. Now, World Superbike grid is not looking as healthy as it did a couple of years ago this year.
No,
we can't afford to lose four bikes.
No way.
So I think,
especially that team. That team has, you know, been around.
Yeah, exactly.
In some form or another,
exactly.
For a while.
And they are up there. And let's face it, World Superbike's made a very refreshing move back towards privateer teams with recognisable manufacturers supporting them. We could do without them disappearing. We really could. So the other annoying thing is in the points. We've all got half points. Everyone who finished on an odd number now has half points. So we've got Max Biaggi leads on 97.5. Carlos Checker just behind on 95.5. Tom Sykes, 91.5. Then a bit of a gap, nearly 20 points, back to Marco Melandri on 72.5. Johnny Ray on 70. Leon Haslam, 68. Sylvain Guintoli, 66, despite not being able to complete either of this weekend's races. Eugene Laverty, 64, so on and so forth. So that was World Supers. It was carnage, but thankfully not in a rider crash sense, with the honourable exception of poor old John Hopkins. And I was at British Superbikes.
Yes.
Now, don't worry, everyone. We're not going to go into great detail about the races themselves. Those who follow it will have seen them, or will be seeing them very shortly. Those who don't probably aren't too bothered, but there's some interesting bits we've got. We had a extra race this weekend because of the cancel race from Brands, where it's a wet weekend, and in one of the support races, some oil got laid down. They can't clear the oil when it's raining, So, or effectively. So they cancelled the second race at Brands, and that was rerun here. So we had the starting grid from Brands, which put Alistair Seeley on pole position. The race was won by Tommy Hill, and Norrie Hager was up there looking like he was having a really good time in second, and Josh Brooks third. One thing that is worth noting, and I'm sure people will be able to find this on YouTube, John Kirkham, K-I-R-K-H-A-M for your YouTube searches, coming up Clay Hill, which is a rising, then a left, a gentle left turn going into towards Druids. They sort of crest, so the wheels go a little bit light as they're trying to turn. John lost the front at 142 miles an hour. Both he and the bike slid towards the air fence, and the bike was going straight at one of the Eurosport cameras. Dangerous Dave, I'm told, was the cameraman, and the bike leapt the air fence, somersaulted over, missed the camera by about 2 feet. And when we first saw a shot from another angle, we thought the cameraman was still there. Oh. Now, I've heard this thing happen before. War correspondents, cameramen in combat zones often get hurt because looking through a lens, they have a sense of detachment as if they're not actually there, and then wonder why they're there.
It's the peripheral vision is gone.
Yeah.
It's all gone.
But we're glad to say,
if you're not looking exactly at that bike coming tumbling towards you, you probably don't even see it coming.
No. Well, his camera was pointing straight at it, but I'm glad to say the cameraman had taken a quick exit.
Nice.
John, I got to speak to him the next morning with, I was wandering around with being Charlie Hiscott's shadow, and John's okay. He was concussed. He was in the medical center thinking, I recognize some of these people. Wonder who they are. What am I doing here? Couldn't even remember he'd come for a race weekend, so he was clearly not allowed to race on the Sunday, on the Monday, and he'd bitten his tongue really nastily. Ooh. But incredible, he was okay. And again, it looked like he'd gone into the bike. But the race was, the safety car came out, they managed to clear the wreckage, and well, it was helped that the bike had cleared itself to the correct side of the air fence. Then on the Monday, we had a wet to damp race for the first race, and this, I'm very happy to say, having had him on the show recently, this was won by Chris Walker, and his first race win in any main series, leading series, since the 2006 Assen World Superbike race in the wet, that incredible one where he was punted off in the first corner of the first lap and was plumb last and went through to win as other people either went slow or crashed. And this is a seriously, seriously good motocrossing rider. So he brings that to it. And I was in the commentary box, and if you just like to listen, this is what it sounds like as Jack and James get really excited as the stalker, Chris Walker, takes the lead and then takes the win.
All right. Can't wait to hear this.
What a ride. And he's timed it perfectly as well. He's got, what, 3 laps to go. He's going to do this.
Oh, he's going to have a go on the inside of the island. And what a driving picture on the way through out of Cascade.
I'll tell you what, glance at Shaky Bird as he went past. Yeah. Go on, lad.
Good Walker. I've been absolutely loving every minute of this so far. He's got. Now, could this be a 21st race win? When was the last time he won a race?
I'll go so far as to say it is going to be.
Howland has just crossed the line. 0.05 of a second behind Norrie Hager. It matters not. Look at this. Across and out of Deer's Leap. It's going to be a big head.
Concentrate.
I beg your pardon. Concentrate. He's just come playing and I'm getting too excited. He's going to get through Druids without cracking his knee.
He knows he's got time. He's not even pushing it. He knows he's got time. He's had a good look round. He knows what the crack is. He isn't going to make a mistake now, I'll tell you.
Chris Walker drops, he's going to just let go of the demons as he goes through Lodge Corner, drops down Deer's Leap. It's victory for the stalker, Chris Walker, for the 21st time in British Superbikes, for the Primo Bournemouth Kawasaki team, takes a fabulously applauded victory here at Holden Park. Where did that come from? Second Shaky Bird, third place for Josh Brooks, fourth place will be Tommy Hill. There he is on the Swan Yamaha.
So there we go. Jack getting ahead of himself. He was not quite going up Deer Leap. He was going up Clay Hill at that point. I was thinking that would have been a quick lap. But brilliant to see. And they're so natural, those two guys. James and Jack are very much in the Moody and Ryder kind of teamwork bracket. Josh Brooks again picked up third. And the final race was won by Shaky Byrne from Tommy Hill and Stuart Easton. So we've got Hill leading on 98, Brooks 92, Byrne and Easton both on 88 points, then decent gap back to Ian Lowry and Alistair Seeley on 52 and 49 points. Those are the six riders that, were we to get to three meets from the end of this season, would be split off into the showdown, which was they become the only ones who can win the title, and that was designed to try and avoid a runaway win where, you know, the title's decided by halfway through the season. We're now just going to have a quick listen to, and this is one of the unsung heroes, this guy, Charlie Hiscott. Through his good offices, I was able to spend the time the weekend with the Eurosport guys. Charlie's a TV producer. Without people like Charlie, our TV watching wouldn't happen, but they rarely get mentioned, let alone listened to. So there's a little bit of man love going on here, but I'm sure people can. There's a bit of a bromance brewing, but people can live with that. So take it away, Charlie. I'm now joined by Charlie Hiscott, who wanted to come out for a cigarette break and to text some friends. But again, it's Martin for Motorpod. It's through Charlie's a TV producer for Eurosport. He's the guy who tells everyone where they need to be, with what kit, who they're talking to, what's happening next.
I have to get him dressed as well.
And Charlie has to get them dressed. And yesterday was carnage. I mean, we had all sorts going on. We've spoken about it. I mean, I imagine that's probably as bad as it gets.
It's pretty rare for us to have British Superbikes, World Superbikes and MotoGP all on the same day. We have had it before, but with the Castle Grace and Brands Hatch then being run on the Sunday effectively, then yeah, it made for quite a busy day here.
So, yeah,
especially with poor conditions in Monza, at the start of the weekend the conditions in Estoril didn't look too good either, so we knew we were on for a tricky day at best.
And it was so obvious yesterday that the people watching at home, and you know, we know through Twitter that people sometimes complain about the schedules and all that. You're trying to fit all that in, and then that plan changes, and there was very much a feeling of it was ducks on the lake, you know, serene above the surface, underneath paddling. And I can tell the listeners that if you're watching British Eurosport and you see a link goes to Tony and he's got James Hayden or James Whittam or Jack Burnicle and they're chanting to one of the riders, 15 seconds before they were throwing their kit on being told we've got to be outside now. And it really is amazing. It's incredibly professional and really fascinating to see. I'd also like to say massive thanks to Charlie, because it's through his good offices that I've been able to be in the background and watching all this go on.
It's been a pleasure having you along, mate. It really is.
And it is a real team effort. Everyone mucks in. You know, you got Jack Burnicle running off to make cups of tea for people, and you know, it really is fascinating. And we've had a fantastic weekend of racing. It
has been really good, actually. Yeah, I mean, it's just because it's you know, it's not a huge budget on this job. People think that, you know, we're a massive TV company, but we're not. We have tight budgets, we don't have a lot of facilities and that sort of thing, so everybody has to muck in and pull their weight, basically. So it does build a really good team, actually. Yeah,
and certainly, I mean, the only other media gig I did was MotoGP at Silverstone last year, and I wouldn't say there's that much difference. BSB for a national series, they really seem to have it together. We were talking to Jonathan Palmer earlier off air, and he was talking about the new rules, because we're now pretty much all on Evo rules, and it's certainly making some good racing. We've had some fantastic races here, and for those who live abroad who maybe can't get the official feed, if you can find a way to watch BSB racing, I promise you'll be hooked.
You can always watch it on Eurosport Player. That's probably the best way to watch it.
There you go, subscribe to Eurosport Player and you can get to see the BSB races. We've got Norrie Hargerim, we've got Shaky Byrne, who's been in World Superbikes and MotoGP before.
We've had six different race winners in six races.
There you go. That is the start of the day.
That's conclusive proof that the new rules are working.
Yeah, and hopefully.
I mean, like today we've had Tommy Bridwell on pole position and stuff like that. So I mean, that just couldn't have happened over the last few years, you know. So the new rules are a really level thing. The fastest lap taking the grid position for race two.
You know, that's something that some of the overseas listeners may not be aware of. BSB changed the rules last year, and
you have the qualifying generally on the Saturday, race day Sunday, race one goes from the qualifying. Your fastest lap in race one, which has to be on the tyres you start the race with, and that's an important consideration, creates the grid for race two. And that's something certainly personally I'd love to see in World Superbikes. If someone has a disastrous Super Bowl, they can make good for it in race two, in race one, and still salvage something for the weekend.
I mean, this is the thing that MSVR are brilliant at, is that they really understand that it's not just about the racing, it's about being putting on a show. Do you know what I mean? It's about the viewer and it's about the people that come to the circuit. So it's really important that there's a really, really good show, and that's what these rules are designed to do, is to level the playing field. And like, you get people like Tommy Bridle, I like today's classic example of people suddenly being sprung to the front. He started from pole today. You couldn't get that in World Superbikes, you know, unless you're on a factory bike or whatever. It's levelled it and it's made it, you know. It's also, it's really good for bringing through new stars, you know. There's lots of new ones. All of a sudden you get people popping up all over the place. You know what I mean? Chris Walker winning the race today was obviously quite amazing as well.
Oh, it's fantastic. He looks so brilliant, so exuberant, doesn't he? Yeah, if I might go and see if I can talk to him. He might be more friendly today.
Whip down here in a second, mate. We'll go and see if we can find him.
All right, brilliant. Charlie, thank you very much indeed.
Pleasure having you along, mate. You're always welcome.
Thank you.
So there we go with Charlie Hiscott and the Eurosport team. Massive thanks to you guys, and looking forward to seeing you again very soon. Meanwhile, on the other side of the pond, we had another Premier National Series going on, and that was attended by Jim and Jules.
Yeah, yep. So we got some interviews for you guys. I'll be honest. We this weekend was a very difficult weekend for many reasons, because I had a million things to do besides all the racing. So I actually had to split early on Sunday and didn't get to see most of the racing there. And the other thing is that there was so many delays because I believe we had 5 red flags on Saturday and another 3 on Sunday. So everything was constantly getting pushed back. I'll just kind of run through some highlights, and we'll play some interviews for you that Jim collected. So, you know, you were talking about the cameraman almost getting hit by the bike. Well, I was doing photography at the AMA races, and you know, I even realized that I was in motion at one point, because I was looking through the lens. I was just panning the guys going by, you know, and next thing I know, I'm falling. Because I've actually been walking the entire time. I just didn't realize it, and I walked to the edge of a hill and fell down this hill, messed up my hand. So it's, you know, it's a tough job out there for us to bring you all the visual goodies. And the other thing I have to say is that I'm starting to really have a tough time watching motorcycle racing, especially live, because we had some very, very nasty accidents this weekend at Infineon. Nick Hyman is a racer who's currently in ICU with a very, very severe brain injury after a nasty crash at Turn 3 in the Super Sport race on Saturday. Or maybe it was even on Sunday. God, I don't even know. There were so many crashes in that series. That series is Sears Point. Look it up on the map. Google Maps has a very good satellite view of the track. It's a very tight track. It's very famous, but it's very... It's not a track that I would call a safe one, and they've done an incredible amount of work to bring it from insane to, you know,
workable
over the last decade. Because I remember going there, you know, 10 years ago, and looking at even car racing there looked very, very dodgy. But unfortunately, there are some things you can't change, and. There were some nasty crashes because the grid was very big, and it's a very tight class, the Super Sport class. I think in race one on Saturday they had 3 red flags. On Sunday they had 2. Martin Cardenas had an incredible crash, kind of like what you just described, where the bike just kept going, went over the tire wall, kept rolling, but he was fine. He got up and walked away. The biggest stories were the superbike races, of course. Josh Hayes in race one, well, he was just from a different planet. He was amazing. I
Josh just does better the older he gets.
That's exactly what I was just going to say. I mean, the guy does not seem to be affected by age, by the level of the competition, by, you know, you could put him on different machinery. He does like to say if the guys he was competing against, especially Blake Young, who's been challenging him very hard, if he had an R1, he'd have a much tougher time. He does like to say that, but I think that he's being very, you know, humble when he says that, because he really is outstanding. I mean, he was already gapping people, you know, at the end of lap one. But in race two on Sunday, again, he looked like he was just a shoo-in. He had a very strange little crash, and Blake Young was able to capitalize on it. Blake Young was the guy who was chasing him in both races, and so Blake Young got to walk away with a victory and actually ended up doing better because he was second in the first one. So he ended up being better off on the weekend. It was a hot weekend. You could tell the riders were exhausted in the pits. And in Parc Fermé, we had another fantastic, probably my favorite event of the weekend was actually the XR 1200 race, which is the Harley Davidson's. You know,
they're the flat tracker style ones, aren't they?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, we had that supporting BSB last year, but I don't think they got them this year.
They sound cool. They look cool. They're very old school, and we had Michael Barnes, who's you know, I don't want to say an aging, but he's definitely been around for a while. The last time he won a race was in 1996, and but he's been racing at AMA the whole time. He's been racing TTXGP on electric bikes, on the Lightning, and he had a fantastic battle with Tyler O'Hara, and won by 0.149 seconds on the last corner, last lap. Unbelievable battle. And
I was at Alton last year and watching the XR 1200 race, and the championship leader in that mini series, they only went to certain rounds, was also the last British rider to stand on a MotoGP podium in 2000, because it was Jeremy McWilliams, who
no
seems
way.
To have... Yeah, Jeremy McWilliams was in the XR 1200 series last year, and he's one of those guys. He seems to have stopped getting any older at an age where he's just too old to be in MotoGP, but he's still. It's like you're still racing. It's like, yep. It's like, I mean, John McGuinness was in Superstock, British Superstock this weekend, and you look at this guy and you're thinking, he's the sort of guy who should be sat down the pub with me talking about racing, but he's still going to the TT and he's still winning races, and you think, wow, some of these guys have serious longevity.
Yeah, and balls.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Obviously.
Of steel by now with all the accidents I've had. But.
Well, when Ed Hauser was at the Island Classic in Phillip Island, McWilliams was there racing as well.
Yeah,
you know, but yeah, so that was probably the highlight for me. It was a clean race, and also my family was out there on Sunday, and. That was the race that stuck with my son. He was talking about it later, and I love to see, you know, them getting into it as well.
How would you feel if they get into it to the point that your son wants to ride?
That's a great question, but there's no chance that that's ever going to happen. Not because I would stop it, but because he just doesn't show that kind of interest. He's a much more he doesn't have that kind of competitive streak in him at all. So no worries there. I don't know. My daughter could beat that way. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
How would I feel about it if it was really happening? It's impossible to tell because as it happens, you know, things just change. So your whole life changes when you see your children go in a certain direction. You support them and next thing you know, you go back and you go, how the hell did that happen?
Yeah, and they're making their own way in life. I think Mary Spee summed it up when she said, yeah, I could stop him. I could have stopped him racing when he was a small child. I also could have smothered him with a pillow, because effectively that's what I'd have been doing to him. And I think, yeah, you've got to let them go.
Yeah. And then the other thing was, of course, we had the electric bike races. It's the staple, the first round of the TTXGP, and once again we had a very light grid because this was very strange. So Steve Atlas, who last year won the TTXCP race had a high side on the Brammo.
On an electric bike.
Electric bike. Yep. In turn okay. seven, which is a corner you have to kind of square off. You're coming off a very fast corner called the carousel, and then onto a very short straight.
Yeah.
And it's a very very it's a tricky corner. A lot of people high side there, but here's a so you got catapulted off the bike, and I believe he broke his hand. So this was during practice on Friday.
Batteries and wires there. Everywhere, I'd imagine.
What's that?
Batteries and wires scattered everywhere because it's not going to drop any fuel, which is
no,
a good thing.
But they're so heavy. I imagine the impact when the bike hits it's got to be very destructive.
Yeah.
Well. So then they, the Brammo and the TTXCP organizer Azhar Hussain started. Actually, I think Jim might have had a hand in this. In fact. But they got Steve Rapp, who's a AMA, staple, to ride the Brammo, and during qualifying, the exact same place, the exact same accident happened, and he also broke his hand.
Ooh!
So he was out. He was actually running in all these other races. So it was a minor tragedy, definitely, because he's a very popular rider and is a very successful rider. So. Oh, actually, bikes claiming two riders like that was very odd. We ended up with just the two Lightnings running in the open class, and then a bunch of four zeros, which are basically you could buy them as they were raced,
right?
In that same form racing, but they're racing in a different class. So it was a strange thing to watch. Again, I do look at the electric racing with great curiosity because I know that that's in our future. No matter how much we may hate it right now and laugh it off, it is in our future. And when guys like Mark Miller talk about it, you get really fired up. And when Mark Neal makes a film like Charge about it.
And you get people like McGuinness and Rutter who are proper old school dyed-in-the-wool petrol heads. When they're saying,
exactly.
This is something I want to get into, well, it's probably something we should all take notice of.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, so it's the sport has growing pains. I think that it's probably at Laguna, we're going to have a much better showing. We'll have Motochis there and other, hopefully Michelin Motors will come back. I don't know if there's been some rumors about them not coming back to racing, and they're the ones who won Laguna last year. But you know what? I'm rambling, and we have some interviews to run because Jim had a great talk with Josh Hayes, and he also had some chats with Blake Young, Jane Rispoli, who won the Super Sport race, Jason DeSalvo.
Jason DeSalvo as well, wasn't it? And I think we're all interested to hear Matt Maladin's words as well.
Why don't we just play in the back-to-back? I'll play them in order of James Rispoli, Josh Hayes, Jason DeSalvo, Matt Mladen, and Blake Young. We'll come back. We'll sign off.
Okie dokie.
All right. Here we go.
Jim Race here for Motopod with James Rispoli, 2011 Supersport AMA Supersport champion. And you've had a hell of a weekend, dude. I mean, seriously. I mean, under some very changeable conditions. Friday was, like, cool, windy. Yesterday was, like, warmer, windy. And today it was hot and, like, totally dry. And you had battles all weekend.
First off, the track is insane. It's really, really tough. It takes every muscle, every ounce of everything, energy out of your body. Second, in super sport, it's hard to... the times we go on the track are never really near our race time. So when we're going out at 8 in the morning, it's total different conditions. It's cooler. You can breathe versus going out in high 70s. And here, there's no wind today. And, the track was pretty hot. Tires are greasy. Totally different scenario. But other than that, for being my first time here, just it was a great weekend. It was just... it took a lot to slow things down and get the lines, but overall it was just you know, one of those weekends that kind of just we crept up, just kept creeping and creeping up on the pace, and finally, you know, at last little step, we got on top of the box.
Well, and you certainly had a great run yesterday, and you weren't on top of the box, but, I mean, that was a killer run. Today, you had an epic battle, but you had to fight through three red flags. It was like, fuck. Can we please just get this thing done with? I remember Josh Hayes walked by me just as DSB was starting, and he's like, what are these guys doing? And I'm like, we're all waiting.
It was insane. I mean, the three red flags, just, it was, you never get three good starts. Yeah. I mean, it's really hard to get three good starts. Luckily, we got two good and one okay, where we could still, we were in the top three all each time. Every time we have a red flag, the tires get a heat cycle. They get more slick. The bike starts, you know, luckily I have a good dirt track background and been able to slide the thing around, but it was loosey-goosey out there, and it really had to ride super hard. I had to ride my balls off just to stay in front of these guys. And then, you know, one thing is the Triumph has got such a unique sound, and Dustin rides so good. And I knew he's really, really good on the brakes, and he'll stick it in at any time. He did yesterday in turn seven, stood me up a little bit. It's all clean racing, but I was ready for it today. And I wasn't – yesterday I was kind of playing the stalking game, but let him get a little bit of a gap, and we hit lap traffic, pulled away. Today I just went into attack mode. I wasn't going to take any of it. If somebody was leading, I'm going to pass them. I was going to set the pace. I wanted to lead every lap. I didn't want anybody to lead. I wanted to dominate this race. And, you know, I didn't quite dominate the way I wanted to, but I ran really consistent laps. I didn't see a wheel all race once I got to the front, really. And I knew he was there the whole time, but I knew where I was fast, and I was fast in all the key spots. And, you know, it's one of those things when you got to manage, you know, a plus zero gap. You know, if plus zero going across the start finish doesn't mean plus zero everywhere. You know, it's, you know, a tenth here, a tenth there, where you can pull out and then he comes back. So it really is a fine key on how to, you know, race. And the last lap there just was like two laps to go. I set my fastest lap of the race, and then the last lap it was like, all right. You know, I was cutting all the corners because I was like, he's going to try to make a pass. So I opened mid-race, I opened all the doors. Then, you know, the last lap, I shut everything. It was, there's no way you're getting by. But I had to ride really hard, and, you know, it just feels good to be finally up on top of the box and, you know, keep the winning going.
Cool. I remember asking in the press conference, I said 7, 9, and 11. Those were, he tried to come up the inside of you on 7. He thought about it in 9. He thought about doing a bonsai move in 11. I'm like, no, don't do it. Don't do it. And he held back, which is commendable, because it the only way that he could have pulled it off would have been to take both of you out, and that would have sucked. Good on him. He rode great all weekend, but good on you for pulling it off, dude. I mean, just an amazing weekend.
Yeah, I mean, got to thank him for not, you know, doing something bonsai, and, you know, you don't want to say dumb, but, you know, something dumb, yeah. You know. But, you know, I feel if he had an open window and he was close enough, he would have been a clean pass. You know, he's been riding clean all weekend. Got to give him that. He is a very good rider, and he's been on it this weekend. He's been here before, so he definitely was setting the pace. And those corners there, it's weird. It's like I go in a little bit lighter, but I get good drives. And I was working on the drives the whole weekend. And, you know, what? Today I picked up on the brakes, so he just couldn't, just enough he had to think about instead of just acting. And that's what I wanted to do today. I wanted to break the field and try to bring only one or two, like what I did in Road Atlanta with Jake. Yeah. And because it's a lot easier just racing one guy.
Sure.
And you can figure out where his strengths and weaknesses is versus racing five guys, fanning every corner, sticking in, knifing, you know, doing the whole deal. So very young group and a very young group of riders, but I feel like everybody rode like a pro this weekend.
Something that must have been quite different to try and figure out was the last 2 days, Friday and Saturday, we had basically 20-mile-an-hour winds coming at your back, going into, like, turn 9 or going into turn 7 in your face. And today it was relatively calm. So your brake markers move all over the place.
Yeah, this track is known for, you know, the wind, and it's California, so there's a little bit of wind. It's on the hill, but tough finding brake markers here. As you could see in 4, he was really good in 4. I was very bad. I didn't have a marker. I was going off feel every lap, and some laps it would be like, holy crap, where did he find it? And then other laps, what are you doing, you know? But the first start, we kind of had a little bit of a gap. I was really pushing hard, and I think I got a little bit of a tailwind going into 9, and we ran a little deep and ran across the dirt, almost binned it, but put the paddles out and just paddled through. Luckily, we got through. And
you only lost one spot.
Yeah, I went back to third, but okay. I quick, right coming out of turn 11, I made quick work of Porta. And then by the end of the lap, I was right on Lewis again. So I was feeling really good today with the bike. We made a couple of different changes, and it was just... Like, my crew just gives me such a good bike, you know, I got a win for them, you know, like, yesterday was a disappointment, and, you know, I was apologizing to them, because, you know, I had 3 laps there towards the end where, you know, I had a little bit of a mind lapse, and I wasn't going to let that happen. I was going to ride 100% for 18 laps, in this case, 14, and then it was 10, so it was a sprint race, and I wanted to lead every lap, because as soon as we get to 6 laps, it's... I mean, we had 3 red flags, so the 3rd flag, they weren't going to restart the race. It was going to be final, so I wanted to leave every single lap in case we got another one. It played to my strengths this weekend, and we got a big points lead. And, I feel like this is going to be my worst track, as in the hardest one for the year. I feel like all the rest of the tracks I know, and I'll be, you know, strong there right off the bat, and I'll have to go in learning. And, you know, we can just play it by ear. I'm at, as of right now, a 50% win-loss ratio, and I want to keep it. I want to keep winning. You know, I want to dominate this year, and I want to be ready for DSB next year to move up.
Cool. I've had Barry on the show a bunch of times. He's a pleasure to have on and have an Irish voice. He's got to be, obviously, a pleasure to work with, and I've worked with him before. A great, great team owner.
Guy's so solid. It's unbelievable how solid he is. And when we started thinking about this program, and he, before it seemed like he was out of it after, you know, last year with the, and, you know, he wanted to come back in, and we kind of got something together, and we won the first race at Daytona, and it kind of just set the momentum for the year. Just running out of a semi just by itself is insane. And, you know, the program I have this year is awesome. I mean, I got everything I need to win, and it feels great knowing that if we do, for whatever reason, crash a bike or something, we got the parts to fix it. We got the guys behind me 100%. They know what I can do. I know what they can do. You know, we got such good people in this, and Barry is just so solid on how... You know, he's just very good, very, very good. And it, just as a team owner, it's have fun. You know, he takes all the pressure away from everything. You know, it's...
Barry is all about having fun.
if you're not having fun, we don't do it. You know, and that's my motto. And we're having fun. He's very, very knowledgeable. He's been around the paddock a good long time. So any information he gives me is good information. And, I mean, the guy is just so solid, just 100%. I'm so glad to be working with him, and I hope we can have, you know, a long race career with him.
Well, I mean, he's brought so many guys up through the ranks that have moved on to further careers, either in World Superbike, World Supersport, moving on even further. That's one thing that I've always respected about him. You know, Michael Laverty, PJ Jacobson, other guys that he's brought through that are very, very successful overseas. Usually they're guys that he pulls over from overseas. You're an American that he's trying to bring to the system.
Yeah, it's unreal. I mean, that one thing when we were starting to get this deal together and I was doing a little bit more background information, you just look at all the guys he's brought through, you know, like Chaz in the beginning, and, you know, just all the guys, PJ, and all these guys that he's brought through are just come through this program, and I'm so stoked to be here, and I hope, you know, we can keep moving forward and just have a long, like I said, a long career, and hopefully, we don't know what's next, but I'm just happy to be with Celtic and riding for Barry.
Oh, hey, you dork.
How you doing?
Say hello.
How's it going?
Here you go.
Oh, you're live. I'm looking for my keys. As always.
The classic Barry Gilson. Yeah. Dude, cheers.
All right, Jim Race here for Motopod with Josh Hayes, who is nursing a wound or two. we're here at a relatively hot Sunday at Sears Point, Infineon Raceway. Well, it'll be Sears Point officially as of tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it will be. Throughout the weekend, the temperatures have been increasing. Today is going to be interesting because track temperature is going to be up. Which means probably drop tire pressure a little bit and changes your setup. You won yesterday convincingly. What, a 10-second lead?
Something like that.
Yeah. Well, you said on Friday in the press conference after qualifying you wanted to dominate, and you dominated yesterday.
Yeah, no, it went well. One key to that was I got a good start, and the start plays a big role in the race. Fortunately, or hopefully if I can get to the front, I have a pace that the guys can't match. So far, it's proven true in every session that we've been on the track, but Blake's been pretty magical at turning things around. This is fairly typical of this racetrack, weather-wise and track temperature-wise. It was the same thing last year. Last year on Saturday afternoon, it was pretty warm, but we had a good pace, went pretty fast. On Sunday afternoon, it was considerably hotter. The pace was half a second slower. Tommy hung on and beat me. I'm going to try not to continue that trend. But that being said, I think if it gets greasy, it's going to be greasy for everybody. It's not, it's not just going to affect me. They're going to have as hard a time going the paces, what pace they have as I am at my pace. So it's just going to be a matter of trying to go about being smart and doing the same thing I did yesterday and see where that gets us.
Yep. There are three races before you guys run, I believe. You guys are the...
Harley's Super Sport and Sport Bike.
Yeah, so you guys are last up, so at least there'll be some rubber laid down. Who knows what that's going to leave for tarmac?
Ah, that doesn't really affect it too much, I don't think. I mean, the bikes have been on track for the last 2 days. After the first session and every class goes out there, the track's probably about as good as it's going to be. So I'm really not too concerned about that. It's just a matter of the heat and its effect on the tire. And like I said, I feel like I can ride a greasy bike pretty good when things start moving around. And yesterday, quite honestly, in the second half of the race, I was able to slow down so much, there was just no way I was going to make a mistake. I was idling through the entire chicane back there in the back and never even touched the throttle till I had the thing way up off the side of the tire. Same thing with turn 2, turn 4, turn 7, the last turn, I was just being ridiculously careful and was going considerably slower than I was capable of going, just because my focus was more on not making mistakes than it was on battling for a win.
Another big difference today is that there's virtually no wind.
Oh, I don't know. It's still early in the day right now, so give it some time. But, I think I struggled a little bit with the wind in qualifying and in practice and stuff like that. But if the wind reduces, I think I can just go faster too.
Cool. All right. Well, I wish you the best of luck today. And I have a feeling you're probably going to check out like you did yesterday, dude.
I'd sure like to. I hope so. I want to do it for my boys. I know we all want to see close, tight racing. I want to be in close, tight races. But I'm not going to back down to make that happen. They're going to have to come get me.
Yeah. Well done. And I will see you in the post-race press conference.
I hope so. Sounds good.
Cheers, mate. Jim Race here for Motopod with Jason DeSavo, who just won the Daytona Sport Bike race here at Sonoma, or Sears Point, or Infineon Raceway, whatever they're going to be calling it tomorrow. You got to be stoked.
Yeah, it was a great weekend. We've just been chipping away at it. The Triumph 675R, we've known from the start it's an amazing motorcycle, and it's just we haven't had the biggest... The most time to develop it over the off season, so it's just kind of continuing on. Each race weekend we go to, I feel like it gets a little bit stronger. Of course, Daytona, that was uh, that was kind of one thing we, you know, that was just, I don't know, an inspired ride, you can call it. But as far as our overall development goes, I feel that here this weekend, we've reached the highest point that we have so far with this bike. And we're not going to give up yet, though. We're just going to keep pushing forward and trying to make this thing, you know, just refine it, polish it, massage it, make it as good as we can.
You know, it's a very interesting bike, and I look at the rather spindly swing arm, and I look at that, and I'm like, how the hell can that thing not wind up?
You know, it's a pretty rigid motorcycle. You know, it's got good chassis flex. You know, the way that it flexes is really good. Mid corner, it turns really well. And other than that, you know, like you were saying, coming out of turn 11, it's anytime on the throttle with this thing. I mean, it's Drift City, and it's just so much fun.
Yeah. And as you said, Dirt Bike Central.
Yeah.
I mean, you were tearing it up. What did the tires look like at the end of the race?
A lot better today. Yeah. At the end of the race yesterday, they were a little bit haggard, but today they were much better. The guys made some changes overnight, made the bike a little bit easier to ride, made it a little easier on the tires throughout the race. And even though I was kind of, you know, just working the gap the final three laps, I felt if I had to push hard, I could have.
Really? So you could have pulled out more. I mean, you felt comfortable. And as you said during the press conference, you were watching Martin's board, which is wise. You pretty much felt like you could pull off.
No.
Yeah, that's wild. We're watching the Superbike race here, and Josh Hayes just hit the deck. That's amazing. He's been on fire this whole weekend.
I'll leave that in.
just an update.
Okay. Wow.
And sorry for the spoilers.
Yeah. All right, man. Well done for this weekend.
Thank you.
Points wise, what are you in second?
I don't know. We after the double DNF at Atlanta, we're still digging ourselves out of the hole. But I have full confidence in the bike and the team and myself that we'll just, you know, we're gonna keep chipping away at that and just keep racking up solid finishes, and I believe that we'll hit the top.
Cool. We'll keep on it. We'll chat again face-to-face at Laguna.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Jim Race for Motopod with
Matt Lem. How you doing, Matt?
Good.
Welcome back to Sonoma.
Yeah, no, it's good to be back.
A little warm, classic Sonoma weather.
It's
always
beautiful.
Your favorite track, was it?
Oh, no, it was a good track for me. In the early days it wasn't, but they made a lot of improvements to this racetrack. So
I raced here back in the day.
It's good.
Yep.
Good people, good, well organized. So.
Absolutely. Put yourself in your current shoes. Let's say you were back on the Yosh Suzuki. Going up against Josh, what do you think? It went 40 pounds lighter.
Josh should probably beat me.
Yeah?
Yeah. That motorcycle in 2009 when they gave it to us as a new bike wasn't very good, and it's still not very good now.
Yeah, Blake is still doing some complaining right now. But
yeah, well, it's just, you know, it's that motorcycle, they need some serious, they need a serious new bike.
Serious update.
Yeah, so the Yamaha, I mean, and that takes nothing away from Josh. He's working hard, you can tell. I mean, he's fit and he deserves to win. And, you know, he has a good bike and obviously has a good crew around him, and he works hard and puts in. And in the end, that's what's going to win races. But, yeah, at the moment, I wouldn't like to be racing him on that Suzuki.
Yep. I know you're not coming back as much as we would love you to, but you're having a blast with your flying right now, aren't you? With your flying?
Oh, yeah, I do a bit of flying and stuff. Yeah, I'm into my helicopters and stuff like that. And other than, as well as the farming and, of, you know, with the livestock, I'm also sort of getting into the aviation business side of things a little bit, where I own some helicopters and cross-hire them back to flight schools and things like that. So, yeah, I stay busy.
Cool. What brought you back up to the States?
I'm going to hang out with Bob Hanna this week and do some flying. So.
Right on. Canyon flying?
Yep.
Well done.
So.
Cheers, mate.
Yeah.
We just go. Jim Race for Motopod with Blake Young, who has been pretty much the top contender this weekend to try and challenge Josh Hayes. How's your weekend going in your mind? You're still working on that Suzuki, man.
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a struggle for us this weekend. Seems like we unloaded it off the truck a little bit slow. You know, this hasn't been a racetrack in the past for me that I've typically done well at. So, You know, yesterday I was pretty happy with my result. Ended up second place. That's the best I've ever done around here. And, you know, we learned a lot in the race. We're going to definitely apply it to the bike. We already did this morning session, apply it again to the race, and see if we can't close the gap up a little bit more, and if not, race with Josh.
A little bit different conditions today, obviously. Much less wind, so track temperature is going to be a lot higher. I chased Peter off. I saw that. It's too bad because I could have asked him about this. But what are you guys going to do to try and figure out how to handle this afternoon's conditions? Because you guys race late.
Yeah, you know, I'm just expecting it to be a little bit warmer today, a little bit more greasy, and that's just going to make the bike slip and slide around a little bit more. But, you know, I don't really know if it's as much key on setup as maybe fitness at today. So it's going to be hot. I need to keep hydrated and keep consistent, keep focused, keep hitting your marks, and just put in good laps consistently and hopefully get to the front.
There's no doubt that yesterday in the press conference that y'all, all three of you guys, looked whooped.
Yeah, I mean, Infineon, you really don't get a spot the rest. Even the back straightaway, the thing's wheeling, and it's kind of out of control, so all the way until you're braking. So you don't really get much time, pretty much never get any time to rest around here. So it's 22 laps of hard concentration and being consistent.
Cool. Well, best of luck, and I hope things come out well, and keep it close to the front, sir.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much for having me. Cool.
Okay, so there's your AMA, Phil, for those in the States or those in overseas from me who do follow the series. Like I said, the Josh Hayes interviews are always fascinating. He's such an interesting character and so honest. And yeah, I mean, he actually had some interesting things to say off the record, but I don't know if we could talk about that here. But
that's terrible when we do that to the listeners.
Yes. I shouldn't do that. But anyway, so that's the AMA weekend. Like, sorry, I can't give it the kind of attention it deserves. I mean, these guys are racing their hearts out. Our boy Nick Grice was out there. He's a good friend of the show. Him and his brother Todd. And you know, you watch these guys on a tight track like Infineon. It's probably very similar to watching the Alton races.
Yeah.
You know, very old school, tight track. They work so hard, and I definitely would like to give them, you know, more. But I'm exhausted. In fact, this was the first time when because Jim and I attempted to stay up all night watching the MotoGP races, where I actually fell asleep during the racing, and because I had to go to a movie premiere that a friend of mine had a film premiere on Sunday. It was just a ridiculous weekend.
Yeah, it was crazy. You know,
it was really quite crazy. I didn't even watch World Superbikes, Super Sport, which is probably the first time I didn't watch them in like 4 or 5 years.
So it was handy they actually didn't happen.
Yeah. I honestly was like, really? They canceled one race and the other was half? Phew. You know?
Well, this weekend we've got World Superbike and World Supersport at Donington Park, and that's it. I don't think there's anything else happening we need to give any attention to, so that'll be a bit of a relief. Right. And
it'll be like a vacation.
Do what?
It'll be like a vacation.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be back next week to talk about that. So that might be a bit of a shorter show, unless, of course, any news breaks like Ross is retiring, he's been made president of Italy, or anything else. He's entering the Eurovision Song Contest, duetting with Jerry Burgess on Those Were the Days, My Friend. I'm not gloating. That just came out of nowhere.
That sounds horrible.
Yeah. It did. What, the idea of them singing, or?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost as bad as you doing a Jorge Lorenzo impersonation.
Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah. Should have practiced that.
Now we've gone full circle.
Casey for sure is very, very fast, but we fight to the end. Something like that.
Very good.
Okay, everybody. I'm out of here. I've got a day to go and do. And in fact, I'm off to Hampshire this afternoon.
All right,
got to go and check some guys out. That sounds terrible.
I don't know what that means. But
that means I'm going down, and one of our pilots who used to fly the old type of aircraft.
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. We're going to check out some dudes. Yeah.
I realised people might think that, so I thought I'll just quickly correct myself. So I'm going down to he'll just have basically it's about 1 hour of flying check for me to requalify him on the old type, because we're getting the old types have been used as spares at the moment, so you need the guys to be current on both types.
Before you go, Martin, how many hours do you have on that whirly bird of yours?
What, on the Bolko?
Just in general, on the aircraft.
3,750-odd or something.
Wow.
Yeah. It's
that's some serious.
If you think how many hours have gone by since I started flying, coming up to 16 years ago, that's not many. That's not a very high proportion, but it's good. To people who have to pay for their own flying and do it for fun, it will sound an enormous amount, 3,700. But then I've always been in that privileged position. I've never had to pay for it. The government paid for it whilst I was in the army, and now my employers pay for it. So. I mean, hats off to guys who seriously have to make economies in other parts of their life to enable them to go flying. It's a very expensive business, but I don't have to pay for it, so woohoo!
Quite the opposite, right? Okay, well, have a great time checking out the guys.
Okay, guys, and all you listeners out there, thanks very much for listening, and have a great week. Hope you enjoyed the weekend.
I guess we're going to toss a couple of extras at the end. Why don't you tell us very quickly what we're going to hear?
So we've got a little bit with James Whittam talking to the Shoei technician about the racers' helmets. And this guy deals with about 25 racers a weekend, and they each have three or four helmets, and some of them like a certain type of tinted visor in certain conditions, and they're... Well, I'll let you you hear it. But it's fascinating, and it just gives you an idea of how much behind-the-scenes stuff goes on. There's a bit of banter in the commentary box going on between James Hayden, James Whittam, Jack Burnickle, and Tony Carter and the producing team. Alistair Seeley and Alex Lowes, two BSB riders. Alex Lowes, of course, the twin brother of Sam Lowes, World Supersport rider. And then another little bit of commentary on the final race with Shaky Byrne winning. So we will chuck them in at the end, guys. It's a total of about 10 minutes, but do enjoy.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Martin, and we'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely.
Thanks to everyone for listening.
G'day.
Ciao.
Still raging for sixth place. Norrie Hager, though, at the moment looks as if he might have that fast note, but there again, there's a couple of overtaking possibilities yet for Michael Laverty.
Yeah, you just think it's going to be a mistake from Hager if he's going to lose that sixth. It's a shame, Ben.
Shaky Byrne, he's going to be back on top of the box in the winner's circle at last. In 2012, Shaky Byrne, champion of 2003, champion 2008, wins again at Alton Park and looks pretty thrilled at that.
I think he's happy.
Tommy Hill looks, I don't know whether that was joy or frustration. Stuart Easton, was splendid third, ahead of a frustrated Josh Brooks in fourth. Tommy Bridewell, another Lion who's been placed ahead of Norrie Hager, Michael Laverty, and Paul Settergren-Dowling.
Alright, Alistair, it's Martin from Motorpod here with Alistair Seeley. You're on pole position for this afternoon as the rerun brands, but had a bit of a moment earlier in qualifying for tomorrow's races. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm 100%. Boys are just working on the bike and I'm prepared here for this race. Just a matter of Q2 there, going out. First line lap, get caught out in turn two. Don't think we checked the data. Just to check and see if it was on the bottom of suspension, but it was nowhere near, and just think it got caught out with tire temperature, just not up the optimum range. So it's disappointing, you know, to go down so early and not get a time on the board, because we were pretty comfortable all weekend within the top six anyway.
Yeah, it's certainly been looking good, and I mean, it's looking like we're going to keep it dry for this afternoon. Tomorrow, the forecast's not so good.
Yeah, I'd say today we're 7 points. we'll find out in the dry if the bike's got the setup that we know it has. Tomorrow in the wet, it's a case of, you know, in 20th position. It's not impossible to win the race from there. They say it's going to be wet, so it might help us out.
Yeah.
Try and get a good start.
I've never seen you in the wet on Supersport at Knock Hill with that incredible race. So you certainly don't seem to be put off by the wet weather.
No, I enjoy the wet. Actually, we've been close to winning in the wet this year at Brands. You know, just had a moment the last corner and gifted it to John Kirkham. So just try and resurrect that tomorrow if it's wet. Try and get a couple of wins and try and get good points on the board. Today it's a matter of, you know, we couldn't be starting any better than pole position in the dry. Get the bike fixed here and get a good start and knuckle down and see what we can do in the race.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you do well, because I've got you in my Motorcycle News Fantasy Road Racing team.
All right.
You're my lead PSB rally, so best of luck, Alistair.
All right.
Thanks very much.
Thank
for your time.
Cheers.
Cheers. Martin again for Motorpod, and here with Alex Lowe's. Looking forward to this afternoon. Looking like it's going to be dry for the rerun Brands, and obviously your brother Sam just had a cracking result out at Monza. Did you watch it, or have you got to see it?
I didn't watch it because I was watching qualifying while I was out there.
Oh, of course, yeah.
I just spoke to him. He's happy enough that he knew he wants to get a win, so, but yeah, he's happy with second. But yeah, looking forward to this afternoon. I'm in a lot better position now than I would have been if we ran the race at Brands, so it's worked out quite good for me. But
yeah,
I've got to start from 20th, which is not very good. But yeah, just get a good position the race today, and then I'll start on the second row tomorrow. So
yeah, we were watching it early on, because you had to come in, didn't you? And then made out, and we didn't think you were going to make it for your flying lap. Was there a problem with the tyre, or was it?
No, I used my tyres in the first two sessions, so I was on worn tyres, but I had two worn tyres for the first two sessions, so I went out on one, did the best lap I could on that one, and came in and did the best lap I could on the next one. But yeah, it wasn't any faster, but yeah, sixth place is alright, and I'm looking forward to tomorrow and this afternoon.
It was the most exciting out lap I'd followed, because I think you made it across the line about 2 seconds before the chequered flag dropped, so nice one.
Guys, I looked at the clock and thought, you know, I need to get on. I think of setting my best lap, the second or third session on the out lap, so yeah, it was good. But
someone did comment in the media centre, that's going to be difficult to keep to the pit lane speed limit whilst you're going down there, because it's a long old line.
I tried to control myself. I think I might have given it a little bit, but it's good. I'm happy enough with sixth place. I just need to get a good solid couple of sixth places tomorrow in the race.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I remember when you first arrived with Team WFR and it was going so well, and then obviously you had a few injuries last year, so it's good to see you back. Best of luck this afternoon and again for tomorrow.
Thank you very much.
If it is wet tomorrow, what's your feeling about that? Is it because...
just go as fast as I can without crashing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we watched Sam at Assen, and it was like someone telling me so far ahead.
I've obviously seen Sam and spoken to him since then, and one of the things, in the rain, you get into a rhythm, and if you try to slow down, that's when you make mistakes. But obviously, you make a mistake anyway, that's done with now. But I think, you know, it's just about using your head and trying to be smooth.
And is it possible to see your pit board when it's in conditions like that?
It's tricky because you come out a right left hander and you're fighting the bike to keep the bike straight.
Yeah.
So the pit wall is like quite close to the last corner on the right hand side, so it's quite a difficult one to...
So you passed it before you've had a chance to focus in on it.
Yeah.
All right.
But he knew he was long way from nothing, but yeah, he's all right. He's happy enough on there today. So.
Right, it's a good result, and hopefully you can keep it going.
Yeah.
Thanks very much indeed, Alex.
Thank
Cheers.
Without doubt, the most important piece of kit as a rider is your lid. Now, this is the Showy Race Service. This is Paul Mousel. He's the Showy man. His job all weekend is preparing helmets for top riders. What's your job in jail for?
Basically, each rider will drop their crash helmet off to me after each session. We check them over. The vision is obviously the most important thing, so we have the visor off. They've all got a pin lock and a fog insert in there. We check that's clean, put it back in, put their tear offs on. Some have two, some have three, some on the left and the right, some both one and on the left. So, it's just each rider has individual sort of needs. Depending on the conditions, we'll use different tints of visors. So they've got dark smoke, they use lighter smoke visors, they've got very, very light visors. In the wet weather, sometimes use an amber or a yellow. And so, yeah, just whatever each rider's individual requirements are, and they can obviously be quite specific about what they want.
You know all this, have you got it written down somewhere? Because that sounds like a lot of info you've got back.
I think it just tends to store up here, really. When you do it sort of week in, week out, you tend to know what each rider wants. So, if we get a new rider on board, sometimes it takes a couple of rounds to establish what they want. But, generally, when you work with these guys for 4 or 5 years, you tend to know what they want.
How many lids would an individual rider have? I mean, I used to be have sort of three or four on the go at any one time.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's about right. Three or four. They normally have two dry helmets set up, normally with a light or a dark visor on, and then they've got a wet set up, so they've got to worry about changing visors and that kind of stuff. They can just pull out another lead. Normally got a backup. Sometimes they might have one-off designs. If there's a certain event or a certain sponsor comes on board, then you know, sometimes I'll get things shaky with his baby being born, so we did a nice sort of girly one for him. So yeah, just tends to, it's probably over a year that we get for about half a dozen or so.
Obviously depending how many times they go down the road.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, some riders get through more than others. I think the big rate is 12 in a year, but I won't name those. People get some of them. Wrong challenge.
Nana, today we've got a situation where it's been dry. It's been dry for most of the weekend, but it looks like race day it's going to rain. It's actually spitting out there now. I'm thinking that's going to cause an extra load of things for you.
Yeah, it's the same. I think it's the same for the mechanics and everyone else. When the conditions are a bit iffy one way or the other, it does give you twice the amount of work. You've got to get everything ready for the dry, and you've got to get everything ready for the wet. It's one all day. It's the same for these boys. Then it's one condition all day. It makes it work a little bit easier. So you've got to be able to bear the balance.
Now, we know riders are really quirky. They've all got their own pre-race build-up. Some listen to a bit of music on their iPod. And there's all sorts of ways people get into the zone they need to be to go racing. Which are the riders that are more picky than others, let's say?
To be honest, I think we're quite lucky. All the guys I work with are, you know, they're very professional. I don't have any team on them down there. You know, they've got work with these guys, these people who count. So, yeah, I can't just say that many are more demanding than others.
Your job's like with a mechanic. There's not a lot of thanks for it. As long as nothing goes wrong with your particular sort of aspect of what you're doing, that's kind of good enough, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I might prefer if they just drop it off and say nothing. It's when, you know, if they do get problems or whatever. And generally, you know, obviously they are pretty good. If they're under the problem, they want to talk to you. But on the whole, we don't have any time.
Well, I'll tell you what, when we pass your setup every meeting, when we get in the morning, you're working, and when we leave on a night, you're working, you're a gaffer.
I think, like I said, with 25 riders, all with two, three, or four helmets, it's, yeah, I mean, I get through probably four of them every weekend. So, yeah.
This is one.
Oh,
and we're just watching the World Superbike race from Monza, and there's another red flag because it started raining again, and some of the language is, it's alright, we're a post-watershed podcast.
When I leave Kilkenny, I'm not going anywhere near that, really.
Yeah, these guys are wondering what's going to happen now, because we've got the first BSB race in 1 hour and 20 minutes, and there's going to be some build-up required for that with a grid walk, presumably, and...
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some grim faces here.
They can't do that in World Superbike. They don't do that.
Right, this is the plan. There you go. This is the flat plan. This is what we run off.
Yeah.
So this is the flat plan.
So Tony's just showing me the running order.
Running order. So basically, that's the time we should be at for any certain point.
Yeah.
This is who's on camera.
Yeah.
Any graphics that are needed, and then any other graphics that are needed. So this is for Jim's grid walk. If we come to here.
New rules.
No, I don't agree. 50% Kov. Good point. Well made. Kov says the marshals are all clapping and cheering.
So they might be calling it a race?
Yeah, we might have to get out there.
You're ready,
Jay. We need to make some new rules.
Now we've got to...
You can do what they want, basically.
Yeah. Right, at the moment, as we're standing here right now, here we go, we're talking about shifting sounds, right?
Yeah.
12 minutes past three.
Well, I hope
we've just got the red flag for the second race.
Yeah,
that is declared a result. Yeah. We're going to have to stay with the race to get through the interviews and the podium. However, there might be pulled to get us three, four, back out in front of the camera. Then we'll have to analyse the race really quickly, or we might have loads of time, it all depends.
Yeah.
Then
race
we might.
Half points.
Race
never
finish half
seen
points.
That
just the result.
I knew we couldn't call the result.
And what might happen then is we may go to the MotoGP race. We may have to keep going. The MotoGP race may be moved back whilst the BSB race starts. It's all.
Crazy.
Loose is the.
Well, if anybody out there watching or listening to this. If anybody, having watched the Eurosport presentation of the weekend, has got any complaints, you should come and stand where I'm standing, because this is incredible.
I think there's a really good Mustang in there.